We're going to take our Bibles and turn over to Luke chapter 12. The Gospel of Luke chapter 12. We're wrapping up chapter 12. We've been in chapter 12 for a while. And I have learned so much from the Gospel of Luke as I've been studying for the Sunday morning messages. And we want to read a portion of this morning. Luke chapter number 12, and we're going to jump toward the end of the chapter. I'm going to begin reading in verse number 49. Jesus Christ is speaking, and he said, "I am come to send fire on the earth. But what will I if it be already kindled? But I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how am I straitened till it be accomplished? Suppose ye that I am come to give peace on earth? I tell you, nay, but rather division. For from henceforth there shall be five in one house, divided, three against two, and two against three. The father shall be divided against the son, and the son against the father, the mother against the daughter, and the daughter against the mother-in-law against the daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law." And he said also to the people, "When ye see a cloud rise out of the west, straightway ye say, there cometh a shower. And so it is. And when ye see the south wind blow, ye say, there will be heat. And it cometh to pass. Ye hypocrites, ye can discern the face of the sky and of the earth, but how is it that ye do not discern this time? Yea, and why even of yourselves judge ye not what is right? When thou goest with thine adversaries to the magistrate, and as thou art in the way, give diligence that thou mayest be delivered from him, lest he hail thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and the officer cast thee into prison. I tell thee, thou shalt not depart thence till thou hast paid the very last mite." Luke chapter number 12. You ever been somewhere and someone told a joke and you didn't get it? What do you do when someone tells you a joke and you don't get it? What was that? You fake laugh. Exactly right. You act like you understand and you laugh while you say in your mind, "I don't have a clue what they just said." You know, there was a time in less politically correct days where if you heard a joke and didn't get it, you'd be accused of being blonde. In less politically correct days. I have a lot of death stares coming. One of them from my granddaughter. Well, now they don't have blonde jokes. They have smart jokes. Jokes that are only understood by really smart people. And for those who don't get the jokes, they don't call them smart jokes. They call them nerd jokes. Only a nerd would have enough information in their head to be able to get that joke. I was looking at some smart jokes. I want to see how well you can do. See if you get this. All right? What does a dyslexic, agnostic, insomniac do at night? He stays up wondering if there really is a dog. Some of you got that, didn't you? For those of us who wouldn't have gotten that, the dyslexia has got the order of the letters inverted. So he stays up awake at night wondering if there really is a God. But here's another one. Knock, knock. Who's there? Knock, knock. Who's there? Knock, knock. Who's there? Knock, knock. Who's there? Philip Glass. Philip Glass is an American composer whose music is often described as minimalist and repetitive. You don't even get the explanation, do you? Here's another one. A linguistics professor says during a lecture that in the English language, a double negative always forms a positive. But in some languages, such as Russian, a double negative is still a negative. However, in no language in the world can a double positive form a negative. And then a voice from the back of the classroom said, "Yeah, right." Or how about this one? If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the precipitate. Any chemists here? You're expecting the word problem, right? If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. But the joke teller said you're not part of the precipitate because because a precipitate is a solid that forms in a solution that has had a chemical reaction. And so if you're not part of the solution, you're now part of the precipitate. Here's another one. Heisenberg was speeding down the highway. A cop pulls him over and says, "Do you have any idea how fast you were going back there?" To which Heisenberg says, "No, but I knew where I was." Werner Heisenberg was a German physicist and one of the key figures in quantum theory. His famous Heisenberg uncertainty principle states that we can know either where a quantum particle is or we can know how fast it's moving, but it's impossible to know both at the same time. That's why they call these nerd jokes. Got one more. You heard about the new orchestra called 1023 MB. Probably not, because they haven't had any gigs yet. 1024 MB is one gig. But the new orchestra was only 1023 MB. So they haven't got any gigs yet. Sometimes someone tells you something, and even something meant to be humorous, and you just don't get it. That can be a tad embarrassing, and so we fake our laugh while we say in our mind, "I haven't a clue what that joke was about." And you know, while that's not such a big deal in most of life, there are times when it is a really big deal. When you just don't get it. There are times when if you don't get it, the ramifications are going to last for all of eternity. And Jesus Christ challenges some religious people and says, "You just don't get it, do you? You just don't get it." And so this morning, we're going to think for a few moments about that question. Don't you get it? Don't you get it? What's the matter? And Jesus Christ challenged people who just didn't get it. You see, Jesus Christ has been in the Luke chapter 11 and 12. Jesus Christ has been teaching about eternal principles of life and death. He is getting very close to his crucifixion in Jerusalem. And as he gets closer to the crucifixion, the messages about life and death, about eternity, become more pronounced, more in your face, if I could say it that way. And he is dealing with a religious crowd that just didn't get it. And he was challenging them about the fact they just didn't get it. He was speaking plainly with people. He got pretty strong with them. He even called them fools. Fools. Because in life they were so absorbed with making a lot of money and buying a lot of stuff with the money, but they weren't concerned about what God thought about their life. And he called them fools for putting so much emphasis on life down here on earth and totally ignoring where you're going to be forever. He called them fools. In our text today, he calls them hypocrites. I mean, Jesus Christ is he's speaking very plainly, very pointedly to people who just didn't get it. And he challenges them about the fact they just didn't get it. He told them in the passage we read to a moment ago from last message in the series where Jesus Christ said, "You thought I came to bring peace?" Well, that's what the angel said when the night he was born, that he was coming to bring peace on earth and goodwill toward men. And yet Jesus Christ said, "You think I'm here to bring you peace? I'm here to bring division." Jesus Christ said, "I'm gonna suffer. I have a baptism to be baptized with. Oh, I wish it were already over, but I'm constantly every day thinking about the cross that is in front of me. And I'm pressed, I'm straitened, I'm under pressure until it's finally over with." Jesus Christ said, "I'm going to bring division because you have to understand why you're divided from God. You have to understand your sinfulness. Because you can never have peace till after you come to grips with why you're divided from God." Jesus Christ said, "I'll bring you division. And I'm going to be misunderstood. You think I'm all about peace and I'm talking about sin and judgment and hell. And some people just misunderstand me. And I'm willing to be misunderstood because it's a part of what I have to, the price I have to pay in order to be able to bring you peace after you come to grips with the fact that you're a sinner going to hell." Jesus Christ is speaking very plainly, pointedly. And at that point, Jesus Christ said in Luke chapter 12 and in verse number 54, he said, "And he said also to the people, when you see a cloud rise out of the west." You see in your little sermon worksheet here, there. Let's just examine our text for a moment. There's four statements there. I want you to see four things about the text, and then we'll draw from that the message itself, what it is that Jesus Christ is wanting to teach us. But let's examine the text just for a moment. Notice number one, that there are two earthly examples in our text. In verse number 54 and 55, he talks about weather forecasting. He talks about you see a cloud rise out of the west, and straightway you say they're coming to shower. Well, certainly, if you're in Israel and you see a cloud rising out of the west, it's coming from the Mediterranean Sea. You remember Elijah up on Mount Carmel. He looked out over the Mediterranean Sea and he saw a cloud about the size of a man's hand. He said, "Run, rain's coming." And it came. The people learned how to observe their world. They learned how to observe the processes of their world. And they knew when clouds came off the Mediterranean that they were more than likely going to have a rainy day. Jesus Christ says, "But when you feel the wind blowing out of the south, you say, 'Whoa, it's going to be a scorcher tomorrow.'" Yeah, some of us experienced that back in June. We were in that south area from which the winds came. We were down there at the Herodian and up on top of Masada and down at Petra, all south of Jerusalem. And whenever the wind blew from the south, it was the desert wind. It was the hot, dry. It was like opening an oven door and feeling the blast of hot air in your face. Or walking out of a grocery store in August, when you've been in a 60-degree grocery store enjoying the air conditioning, you walk out into the parking lot and you get hit by the heat and humidity of August. My wife always stops and goes, They knew how to observe the processes of the world. They knew how to forecast weather. And so there is a A little earthly story about weather forecasting. Then in verse number 58 and 59, he says, when you have an adversary, and your adversary and you are going to the magistrate, he talked about being sued. You're in a lawsuit with somebody. And they're dragging you into court to sue you. And you're going to be taken. The magistrate's been turned over to the magistrate. The magistrate is going to take you to the judge. The judge is going to pronounce a sentence, and you just may end up being turned over to the officer. The officer will drag you to the prison, and you'll be thrown into jail, and you'll sit in jail till you pay the very last coin that you owe in the lawsuit. Jesus told two earthly stories, well familiar to the people of that day, weather forecasting and lawsuits. It's not too far from where we live today, is it? Weather forecasting and lawsuits. So I want you to notice the second little thing, that each example has a principle attached to it. The earthly story of the weather forecasting has a principle that follows it. In verse number 56, he says, "Ye hypocrites, ye can discern the face of the sky and of the earth, but how is it that you do not discern this time?" So Jesus told the story, then he drew a principle from the story to address to these people. Then on the second earthly story, he led with the principle. The principle is in verse 57. "Yea, and why even of yourselves judge ye not what is right?" Why don't you, with the information you have, with the understanding you have, with the knowledge you have, why don't you judge what is right? And then he told an earthly story about the lawsuit. So we have two earthly stories and we have two principles. The first principle reflects back on the story. The second principle leads into the earthly story. Then number three on your little, let's examine the text. Number three, Jesus is focusing in this amazing passage. Jesus is focusing on observation skills, observing the weather. Did you see that cloud? Oh, feel that hot wind. Feel that wind come from the south. You know what that's going to bring? You know what's going to be here tomorrow? Observation skills. He deals with determination in verse 57. Judge ye. Judge ye. Do something. He dealt with discerning. I skipped that one, didn't I? Discerning thoughts in verse 56. Discern, discern. Twice even. And then in verse number 58 and 59, he deals with the action taken to avoid unfortunate and unfavorable circumstances or results. And then finally, notice that Jesus in this passage is contrasting their ability to their will. Their ability and their will. Did you notice that in verse number 56? Verse number 6, "Ye hypocrites, ye can." Did you notice that word "can"? And at the end of the verse, "But how is it that ye do?" The word "can" deals with your ability. I can do that. I can do that. That's ability. I have the ability to do that. Can you do such? Yeah, I can do that. That's ability. But then when he says ye do not, that's not ability. That's the will. I don't do anything about it. Do speaks of the will to do something, the will to act. Can deals with the ability to do something. Jesus is contrasting their ability to their will. They did not lack the ability to observe, to think, or to reason. Rather, they lacked the will to observe, to think, or to reason when it comes to matters about God. So here's your bluff. Message in a sentence. Get it. Then do something about it. Get it. Then do something about it. Here in this passage, Jesus Christ emphasizes two traits of character. Now, this is directed to unsaved people in the context. Jesus Christ is speaking to religious people who had rejected him. These same traits of character are vital in the lives of people after they get saved. In other words, these traits of character are universal whether you're saved or unsaved. These two traits of character are essential in bringing you to the point of salvation. Then they will propel you through the Christian life in your growth in spiritual maturity. So no matter who you are here, if you're here today and you're saved, or if you're here today and you're not saved, these two traits of character are very important to you. And Jesus Christ wants you to think about these two character traits. Here's the first character trait. Number one is discernment. Discernment. You see the word discern twice in verse 56. You can discern, but you do not discern. Discernment. Discernment. Or if we put it in the question, in the context, he says to them, you just don't get it, do you? You just don't get it. You have not thought. You have not meditated. You have not reasoned when it comes to things about God. You see, this character trait of discernment speaks of the willingness to think. Let me ask you a question. Do you have discernment? Well, all of you have discernment. Like these people, they had discernment in the area of their life that affected their immediate day-to-day situations. They had the ability to discern the weather. These people had discernment. They had discernment about what impacted their immediate situation in life. You have discernment. I bet you exercise a lot of discernment at your job because that impacts whether you're going to get a paycheck to buy groceries, to feed your family. That's the immediate. We all have discernment in some areas of life. And Jesus Christ is addressing this to a crowd of people who have the ability to think, the ability to reason, the ability to observe, and on the basis of what they could observe, they could draw conclusions, they could make decisions that affected the lives that they lived. They were people who had discernment when it comes to the mundane stuff about life on earth. However, when it came to things about God, it's not that they didn't have the ability to discern things about God. They didn't check their brain at the door. The same brain that enabled them to discern in their work environment, the same brain that enabled them to discern in their social environment, the same brain that enabled them to discern in the weather patterns, the processes of their world that they lived in, they had the same ability. You can discern, but you do not discern when it comes to the time in which you live. The principle is that you can learn and think and observe and draw conclusions based on a minute amount of information, and yet, after all the information God has poured out to you about who He is, about His existence, you, even though you have the ability, you don't have the will to think about the reality of God. You will not discern this time. What's he talking about this time? Well, Jesus has been dealing with this. We've preached messages in the last couple of chapters about that. They had the Old Testament prophecies. They had that amazing prophecy by Daniel that even outlined the time frame as to when their Messiah would come, and even the fact that their Messiah was going to be cut off when he came. And they had that dated right to the birth of Jesus Christ. If they just read the Bible, they had the information. They had all the prophecies of the prophets, the city where he would be born. All the details, his name, what he would be called. They had prophecy after prophecy after prophecy. And Jesus fulfilled all those prophecies. I mean, the information was all around them. It's not a question of your ability to think. The information is there. You have a brain. But your will, you do not discern when it comes to the reality of God. All the miracles Jesus Christ performed, everyone traced back to an Old Testament prophecy of who the Messiah would be and what He would be like. His control over nature as He calmed the seas and stilled the waves. His command of the demonic world as He cast demons at will out of people's lives. The ability to control the human body and to give sight to blind eyes. Even to raise the one who'd been dead for days. That couldn't be faked by sleight of hand. He's been dead long enough to stink. Jesus breathed life, commanded, spoke life into that person. I mean, miracle after miracle after miracle. The information was there. And there were people who did observe that information. There were people who did believe. There was Zacharias and Elizabeth. They were watching and waiting and expecting. They had read their Bible. They knew the Messiah was coming. They were ready. There was Joseph and Mary. There was Simeon and Anna. I mean, Simeon, when he looked down into the eyes of Jesus Christ, when Joseph and Mary brought him to the temple that first time, and Simeon took little infant Jesus up into his arms, and he looked down into the eyes of eternity. He said, "Now, Lord, lettest thy servant depart. For mine eyes have seen thy salvation." Because God had told him that as an old man, he would not die till he had seen the Messiah with his own eyes. Oh, there were people who did believe. There were people who were watching. There were people who they did get it. But Jesus is reaching out to the multitudes of people who were rejecting him. And he challenges them. You don't get it, do you? You don't get it, do you? But it's not because you don't have the ability to get it. Because you don't care to get it. You're not motivated to get it. You don't want to get it. And so we cry out to those who are blind today, who refuse to see the obvious. People don't get it today because they don't want to get it. Evidence is everywhere. The evidence for the veracity of the Word of God and the veracity of the person of Jesus Christ is everywhere. Anyone with a computer can seek out God, can search out God, can search out information, can seek out information. The information is there. And people have the ability to discern, but they don't have the will to discern. And so they won't look. They won't seek. They won't examine. They won't meditate. They won't, because it's a matter of the will, not of the matter of the ability. And Jesus calls this group that He's speaking to, He calls them hypocrites. Now this is one little group of this large crowd of people who don't get it. The people to whom Jesus is addressing this comment to are people who were putting on a front that they believed in God, but they were so filled with their own self-righteousness. Jesus has dealt with it over and over and over again throughout His ministry. They're so filled with their own self-righteousness. They're so filled with their own religion. They're so convinced that they're good enough to please God. They put on a front of religion. They put on a front of self-righteousness. They put on a front that I'm good enough. I go here, I do that, I don't do this, I give to that. I'm a good person. And they put on a front of self-righteousness. But Jesus Christ said, you're like a graveyard with beautiful white marble headstones. But inside, there's a rotting corpse. Jesus Christ said, oh, you put on a front that looks good on the outside, but down in your heart, you are corrupt. You're a sinner. You have a wicked heart. Jesus Christ is talking to a group of people who have put on the front of religion, but they don't have a converted heart on the inside. And so he calls them hypocrites. You hypocrites that put on a front that is not true of the reality of who you really are as a person. Because you have the ability to discern, but you have rejected me because you're not willing to come to the point in your life where you face the reality of who you are as a person before a holy God. Because you're not willing to acknowledge before a holy God who you really are in your heart, you choose not to discern. Raise the dead, I ignore it. Sight to blind eyes, I turn the other way. Still the storm, it was just a fluke. Fulfill prophecies, it just happened. You won't think. So Jesus Christ said, you don't get it, do you? Because you don't want to get it. It's your will to not get it. So today we implore people who are intelligent people, who can discern in every area of life except when it comes to God. We challenge them. We challenge them to look at the evidence. We challenge them to research, to think, to learn. We challenge them. We've got at our disposal, at the click of a mouse, we've got at our disposal more information that verifies the validity of God than any generation of human beings that have ever walked on the face of the earth. And that's why I carry little cards. And I encourage you to carry little cards. And we've got them out at every entrance, in the bathrooms, all around here. You can't walk through this building without seeing these stacks of these little cards. And we encourage you to take them. We encourage you to give them out. You know why? Because on the back there's a website. Not our website, but it's a website of little short media clips dealing with the questions that unsaved people are asking today about God and the Bible. To encourage people, take a moment and investigate. Take a moment and think. Take a moment and learn. You know what happens when people take the time to learn? About 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, a lady contacted me. She said, that card you gave me, I went and I watched some of those videos. I said, wow. Wow. Because we're challenging people who don't know Christ. We're challenging them to take the discernment you use and exercise in other areas of life and discern the truth about God. Learn. Research, meditate, observe, and learn. Oh, we have, at the click of a mouse, we've got world-renowned scientists that have long since rejected evolution on the basis of scientific evidence. They mock evolutionists on the basis of scientific evidence. And you know why evolution is still taught as fact in the government schools today? Because people don't want to acknowledge God. It's not a matter of ability to think and to reason. It's not a matter of the ability to research and learn. It's not about the ability to find the evidence for God. It's a matter of the will. I don't want to, because I don't want to be accountable to a God who created me. Jesus Christ is challenging that same type of person in Luke 12 when he says, you just don't get it, do you? But it's not because you can't get it. It's because you don't want to get it. Let me close by pointing to the second principle. The second principle, he starts with the principle in verse number 57. And then he tells the story that illustrates the principle. The second principle, you find the word that is used in verse number 58. Jesus said, give diligence. The second trait is diligence. Diligence. What will you do about it? Now, if you take the challenge of Jesus Christ to exercise discernment and to learn about God, to learn what God requires, to learn what God says, to learn what our world tells us about God, if you'll take Jesus' challenge to exercise discernment, now what are you going to do about it? Now that you know, what are you going to do about it? Jesus Christ gives a second trait, and it's the trait diligence. In verse number 57, Jesus said, why even of yourselves judge ye not what is right? Why won't you pass judgment? Why don't you pull the trigger? Why won't you, you've researched, you've discerned, you've found the truth. Now, why won't you do something about what you've learned? That's what Jesus is saying. You need to exercise diligence to do something about what you learned. So Jesus' principle is, you need to judge what is right on the basis of what you learned. Notice the phrase, powerful phrase in verse number 57. He says, why even of yourselves? I love that phrase. Even of yourselves. Even of yourselves. That is powerful. In other words, he says, on the basis of the information you've collected, on the basis of what you do know, of yourselves, on the basis of what you... You know, God's not going to hold us accountable for what we don't have access to. But God will hold us accountable for what we could have had we been interested enough to know. Romans chapter 2 tells us God put in the heart of every human being a consciousness, a conscience that is conscious that there is right and there is wrong. They don't have an innate understanding of who Jehovah God is, but they have an innate conscience that there are right things and there are wrong things, no matter what culture, no matter where in the world, no matter where they are. They have a conscience that makes them conscious that they're right and they're wrong. And to a human being, every person with a conscience betrays their conscience and they willingly do what they know to be wrong. Jesus Christ said, of your own selves, of the information you have, of your own acquisition of truth. Why won't you do something about that truth you acquired? Why won't you judge what is right? And then he told a story. Simple little earthly story. Earthly story about a lawsuit. Two guys, and one sued the other, and they're on their way to deal with this. And what Jesus Christ says to the one guy that was probably the one guy that was going to end up being charged as being guilty. He's going to lose the lawsuit. Jesus says, why don't wait till you get to the courtroom. Don't wait till you stand before the judge. Don't wait until you're at that last moment. I mean, while you're on the way, begin to talk to the guy that's trying to sue you and begin to reason with him and find some way to have a plea bargain or work it out outside of court. If you can get it worked out before you get to court, it's going to be to your advantage. Don't wait till you're in the courtroom and you're standing before the judge, because the judge is going to say, you're guilty. He's going to turn to the officer and say, cart this guy off. And he's going to cart you off and throw you in prison. You're going to be there till you pay the last mite, the last little coin of what you lost in the lawsuit. What's Jesus saying? He's saying to people, don't wait till you stand before God. It's too late then. If you wait till you're standing in front of God to give an account to God, it's too late. You've got to exercise some diligence. And while you're in the way, Jesus said, while you're on the way to meet the judge, while you're on the way to stand before God, and you need to work out something with God. Because if you wait until you stand before Him, He'll dispatch you to hell, from where you will remain until you pay the last coin of what you owe for your rebellion against God. In other words, Jesus Christ says, you better do something about what you know. You better discern what is truth. And then you better have the diligence to do something about what you know. Jesus implores you and he implores me, no matter where we are in life, to diligently act upon the information we have at our disposal. Read our Bibles. Study our Bibles. It's not going to work to get before God and say, well, God, I never read that part. He's going to say, how many Bibles did you have on your shelves at home? How many Bibles did you have on your phone? What do you mean you never read that part? That won't cut it. God will hold you accountable for what you have access to. And Jesus Christ implores you to diligently act upon the information you have at your disposal. Seek God, pursue God, study, read, think, and then do whatever it takes to stand in a right relationship with your Creator before you stand before Him to give an account. You know, regardless of who you are and what you're like, God reaches out to you. Whether you're philosophical or whether you're romantic or whether you're scientific or whether you're a sports enthusiast or a lover of military conquest, whether you love engineering, economics, history, whatever, the Bible has it all. Whoever you are, whatever your interests are, whatever your mental inclinations are, the Bible addresses God from the vantage point of whoever you are, no matter what you're like. And God reaches out to you where you are. And your problem is not that you don't understand. The problem is you don't want to understand. Because if you really wanted to understand, you'd get busy studying and figuring God out. He's everywhere. The information is everywhere. And your problem isn't that God isn't reaching out to you. He is. The problem isn't that you don't have the ability to understand. You do. The problem isn't that you don't have access to information. It's everywhere. The problem that you don't care. And that's what Jesus Christ is dealing with at the end of chapter 12. Don't you get it? Don't you get it? Discernment and diligence will bring you to the understanding of who God is. The unwillingness to find truth. The unwillingness to find that everything's points to the existence of a loving God who has personally paid the ultimate price to rescue you from your wickedness. But then our pride and our love for sin makes us unwilling to do anything about it. God help us all, whoever we are, whatever stage of life we're in, saved or unsaved, we all need the discernment to figure out God. And then we need the diligence to do something about it.